This is Akafe. Laura Marie and Jessica Marie proudly present A Court of Fandoms and Exploration, a podcast. Fair warning, everything the hosts say is explicit, full of spoilers and adult content, and shall not be used against them. They have opinions. Let's try not to drag anyone for expressing themselves and just have fun for an hour. We all deserve it.
This episode is spoiler-free with mentions of Heir of Shadows and Ice and Shadowhunters.
Everybody, and welcome to A Court of Fandoms and Exploration, your weekly deep dive into the fantasy literature and fandoms that we love. I'm Laura Marie.
And I'm Jessica Marie.
And today we are welcoming a very special guest and our new friend. This is author J.M. Wallace.
And J.M. is the author of multiple books, including the trilogies A Legacy of Darkness and what we'll be discussing today, Claiming Elfheim. And we'll be discussing book one, Heir of Shadows and Ice. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
We are so excited that you are here to talk about your new audio release. We are just so thrilled. Jess, did you love this book?
I loved it right off the bat. I think it was great. I know that the book itself is like traditionally out there, but we totally lean into the audio side of things a lot of times. And I really rushed to find book two in Audible. And I was like, wait, that's right. Heir of Shadows and Ice only came out this February 2024. What was that whole process like?
Well, it's my first audiobook, so I have nothing to compare it to, but it was amazing. I actually met my narrator through the BookTok, Bookstagram community, and we met in person for the first time this last May at Books, Gowns, and Crowns. So when I found out she had she's like, I have openings immediately. I knew Allie Dane, you are Calera. You are the voice of this book. So she really helped me through the whole process. It was like a major, definitely like a collaboration rather than I just hired someone for a job and, you know, she did her part and I took care of my part. It was a nice team effort.
Do you feel like having that relationship build helped with the whole process, especially it being your first one to have and give you enough confidence to be like, oh, that this process doesn't have to be so daunting?
Absolutely, because I already trusted her, you know, as a friend. So, and then she being already established in the narrating community, she was like, okay, this is what we're going to do. We met, you know, via Zoom face to face. And then she had me fill out she had a really fun character workup sheet. So we went over accents, what actors or actresses I would pick to play each character. And I was like sending her for the villain. I was sending her, Vecna from Stranger Things, the bad guy in Stranger Things. I was sending her YouTube clips of that. And I'm like, this is who I picture. And she's like, perfect, got it. And I really think that kind of taking the time to have fun with it together and work through all of that really shows in the final product.
I have no talent. I have said this several times on Akafe. So I love audiobooks and I cannot imagine the talent that it takes to be a narrator. It is incredible. And also a writer. I think having the talent to make people feel something on paper, and then again with your words, is just something that is absolutely fantastic. And you are the author of not only this, I mean, we're talking about just one book, but this trilogy, but several other books. I would like to ask you about your writing process, because I know that your first trilogy, you were a little bit by the seat of your pants.
Yes, absolutely. I wrote my first book and published it simply to say that I had done that. I wanted to publish a book.
That's so cool.
How great. And finding the time and making it a priority.
Well, and that was, so I wanted to do it by the time I turned 30. I think I published it in October and I turned 30 in that November. But really, the only reason I was finally able to sit down and do it was we had just moved to a new area and it was like the height of COVID. And so you couldn't go anywhere, couldn't see anybody. The kids were half in school, half out of school. But they were old enough to give me, you know, I wasn't changing diapers or anything at this point. So it was the first time I really had a chance to sit down and see if I could do it. So, yeah, my first few books, the process was a little chaotic, very fast paced. Now I feel like I've really found a rhythm that I'm comfortable with and that I can keep up, because there's no way I could keep writing one book a month for the rest of my life.
Oh my gosh. Now, what would you say was the hardest part about starting off, and then something, and on the opposite end of that, what do you think was the easiest part that you didn't think was going to be as easy?
I think it was surprisingly easy to get it on paper, to write that first draft. Cause I thought, you know, when you start, it seems so daunting to sit down to a blank piece, like a blank computer screen or a blank piece of paper, and to think, wow, I have to get an entire story out on this paper. So that it kind of flowed right out. It was like it had been waiting to be released. So that was surprisingly easy. The hard part was learning what to do with it afterwards. And I really give a lot of credit to my community on BookTok and Bookstagram for guiding me through that. Like the people who had already been through the process or who were currently doing it, I would have just been sitting with a written half finished book. I wouldn't know what to do with it if it weren't for them. So.
Well, and the community is so important. And I think that the community, I mean, the Bookstagram, the BookTok community does kind of get a bad rap sometimes, but there is so much good there and so much support and love that it is wonderful to hear these like positive stories of like, yes, I was able to learn so much and I found like help and like a group of people to really like love and support there. That's so fantastic.
Yeah, it really is. And I don't know if I just got lucky and ended up on the really good side of BookTok or something, but I remember with my first book, I couldn't figure out how to format it. I've never done computer stuff. And I'm like, I just wanted to write a story with a little smut. You know what I mean? So actually Kale Morrison formatted my first few books for me and my first series for me, like the paperback. Cause I was like, I don't know what to do. And she's like, girl, just send it to me. I'll just do it.
That's so sweet. And to like trust somebody, I feel like there's also a level of trust that is very hard to come by for some people. And especially with something that you've created and you're like, I have to trust this whole other person that it'll be formatted correctly. And I think there's something so special there too.
Yeah. Yeah, it really, I feel like anytime someone asks me about writing and the process and publishing, I come back to community so much because I'm like, literally none of it would have been possible without, you know, my critique partners or even the, you know, readers who like to post about my book and who have been there since the start. Like, I just cannot say enough how grateful I am to have that.
That's so wonderful. It's just, it's so good to hear positivity. There's just like so much, not that everywhere, yeah. You know, so like happiness anywhere.
Yeah. And even like the bigger, like outside of book talk, I think like outside of the book community, there's all these external forces that want to kind of bring us down and make us seem like we're one thing or the other. Like nobody gets it unless you're in it, really.
Yes. Yeah.
So I want to know, you had a very fast pace for your first trilogy. This is The Legacy of Darkness, those three books. And you switched up your writing style. You refined it, you would say.
I did. Yeah, I definitely, and I feel like I'm still refining it. There are some things that I still look back and think I'd do differently. But one big thing that I did for my second series, Heir of Shadow, the Claiming Elfheim trilogy versus the Legacy of Darkness, is I plotted with the Legacy of Darkness. We were really just winging it. We were go off on a ride. I didn't really know where we were going. I do think it ended up okay. We turned out all right. But with Heir of Shadows and Ice, you know, I got Save the Cat writes a novel. I got Romancing the Beat and all these resources. And I really started to pay attention to when I read, I'm very much escapist. Like, you take me anywhere. I'm going with the flow. You can tell me anything. I'm like, yeah, okay. But you can't, I can't write that way. I really realized that I needed to take the time to slow down. So now even when I read, I'm like, oh, okay, I see they're hitting this beat here, and they're, you know, paying a lot more attention to that sort of thing. So we can slow down and the reader can really enjoy the ride instead of me flinging them around like a roller coaster.
Do you have a big like murder board with string, or are you like on the computer? I don't know. I'm very visual. I would need it very large for me.
I would love to have the big the big murder board with connecting the dots. I do think it would be easier sometimes because I'll think of something that I need to like put in between a scene or something like that. Having something large and very visual like that would be helpful. But right now, I just have each story gets a notebook, and I use a lot of the little tabbies, a lot of post-it notes, and I pour everything in there because I do a lot of world building too. I make sure I'm including the politics, what they're wearing in certain regions, what a character looks like, because very often I'm like, what color eyes did I give that man?
Well, and something that you do so well in Heir of Shadows and Ice is that it doesn't feel overwhelming when you're building the world and when we're being introduced to the world, because I feel like sometimes it could feel like, here's this whole new book and this whole new world that I'm getting exposed to. And it just can feel overwhelming because it's just like dump, dump, dump. But it's integrated so beautifully. And like there's a part where like Kalera, we're having little descriptors here. And then you find out later and she's like, what's a curvy girl like me? And I'm like, did I not remember that? No, but it was just because it was so tied in where it, your body isn't the most important thing about you. You're learning about the characters. And I think that's such a beautiful thing. Like, yes, you have the descriptors of the green eyes with Alexander, but there's so much more to the characters that you've created. And you get excited about like what's next, what's coming. And you're just waiting for the next page to turn.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, I feel like I really enjoy writing descriptions a lot. I even down to like the food, what they're eating and things like that, what they're wearing. Cause I grew up on Disney princess stuff. I love the dresses and all that, but I also don't want it to take away from the story itself. So I feel like I've worked really hard to find a balance. Same with the world building. I don't want to pull people. I don't want people to have to think and feel like they're like having to remember a history class with the politics of the courts, because we have several courts. We have a lot of political intrigue in this. But I wanted people to really be in the moment, in the story, while still getting the other stuff sprinkled in where you need it.
Well, and you're talking about the courts, you're talking about this intrigue and your politics. Can you take us through your inspiration for this? We have like fae folklore, but like you have really made this your own. Like, did you always have an interest in this?
I really love old folktale stories. I grew up reading a lot of like fairy tale stuff, but like the old, like my great, great grandma was from Scotland. So we, you know, don't like step in a fairy ring or
like. But did you, have you ever? Cause some, it's really tempting with all tempting. The fantasy reels out there.
I'm not going to lie. I should know better as a fantasy writer, but whenever when my kids were a little bit younger, when I'd try to get them to leave the park, there was a really pretty stump and I'd be like, okay, let's go collect gifts for the fairies and leave them on the stump. So we do sometimes break the rules. So far, it's okay. But I just grew up in an environment where we loved storytelling. You know, you sit around the table and you listen to the grownups tell stories, and sometimes it seems a little far-fetched. So I already knew that I really wanted to write a book that was kind of true to some of the lore. Like, I tried to stick to a few of the classic fae rules where they can't tell a lie. But I did want to twist it to be a little more, I don't want to say princessy, but like more romantic, I think, more ball gowns and, you know, the being in this big palace that you can't get out of. The halls are shifting. So I had a lot of fun with it, kind of putting my own spin on the lore.
Well, and then our main character, Kalera, there's so much focus about female empowerment and trusting herself and caring about her female friendships. And even there's a part where, I mean, we're the early part of the book where she's like, if I have to choose between these other humans or my best friend, I have no qualms with just saying, like, it's me and my best friend. And I feel like I feel like most of us would say that. But then you have some people who are like, oh, you know, the hero is saving the world. No, I'm sorry, but my friend is my world. So she goes first. And I love that that's written, because I feel like that doesn't happen often. Or like when she's in the halls and like you said, the hallways are shifting. She's like, okay, well, I was thinking ahead trying to memorize the halls. Now on to plan B. Like, she's always trying to think about the next steps in saving herself. And there's even a line. She's like, looks like we got to save ourselves, you know? And I think that focus is so beautiful here too.
Yeah. I really wanted Kalera to be relatable. And it is always fun to write a character who is a true classic hero. Like, they're just good to the core. But I don't think Kalera's in any way, but I wouldn't even say that she's morally gray. I just think that she's realistic.
Like us.
If your best friend is in trouble and you have to choose between them and a bunch of other people, I mean,
I was going to say something. I was like, wait, that's a spoiler. Never mind.
and she struggles throughout the entire thing with the idea of being perfect. So I definitely, even in the end, didn't want her to turn into the perfect hero, just because that's what she's supposed to be, you know, according to others.
And she even says that under her breath. She's just like, he's like, not everyone's perfect. And she's like, well, I am.
Yeah. She's really been trying.
Right.
But we're not letting her. We're not going to allow that. Yeah, she was a lot of fun to write. I also, like, even in my new book, I think it's just a trend. I don't know if I went into writing these main characters intentionally wanting them to be this way, but they just sort of come out very imperfect. My new book, she's so clumsy. Like, she's really trying to learn to fight. She can't. She's so clumsy at it. And I'm just like, I feel like that's okay. We can see heroes and stories be, you know, not the cookie cutter what you would expect.
You bring up such a fantastic point to speak on the journey of self-acceptance here, because talking about, like, we don't have to be perfect all the time, but like, we have this expectation, like, we don't have to, but like, we want to be, like, mm-hmm. we have this feeling that we have something to prove. And then through this first book, we get to see our main character kind of just embrace your true self and the power that comes with that, and knowing that, like, it can be very scary to fully just accept yourself for who you are, but it might be better. It will be better on the other side. And that you were living a half life when you aren't living your true self. And it was very beautifully done here. And also, she can use a sword, and that's just the best.
I did give her a sword. We had to give her something. Everything else was going bad. But yeah, that is, thank you. I'm glad it came across the way I had hoped. And I think that's also another reason why I chose the Elfheim to send her to this world where, because I knew the problem when I sat down to start writing the book, I knew the problem I wanted. I knew kind of the characters, but I didn't know what world we were going to be in. And I think that Elfheim was perfect because it's wild. It's like natural and raw. And it was the perfect place for her to go and be forced to accept that everything is not perfect. This is, you know, it's chaotic here. It's wild, but it is beautiful. And that's okay. Like, it can be both of those things. It doesn't have to be perfect to be beautiful. So I really think that that's also why I kind of chose the setting for Kalera's story.
Well, and even one of our characters in the Winter Court is like, you know, it's not like this all the time. There is beauty here. Mm-hmm. If you can see it, like it is, you just have to look. Oh, I love that so much. Oh my goodness. Something else, Jess, we touched on it. The female friendship, that is so lovely. And I have to tell you, of course, we are only speaking on book one because we have done the audio here. I am just dying to know what is going on while our main character is in Elfheim. I am like this.
Oh, I see, like, I see it to me. I see JM's eyes. So I have to, like, I'm split. I was like, do I just go get the second book or do I wait for the audio? Whichever's going to give you the royalties, really.
Oh, my goodness. I am just like, I cannot wait. I am so excited about it to know what is going on. Because there is just like, there's plots within plots within plots. So my question for you, though, is, when you are writing stories like this, there are some beautiful men here. And there are some fantastic politics here. Do you prefer writing one or the other?
Well, the politics can get a little tricky. And that's something that really, I rely a lot on like my critique partners and my beta readers to help me through that. So I do enjoy writing it, but it is a lot more daunting than like writing our love interests. I much prefer the romance side of it, which is why nothing that I write will be without romance. So there will always be some fun, beautiful men there.
And there are a ton here. Like I feel like every time one showed up, I was like, this is the person, or maybe this one. Well, something's going on here. Wait, what? Like, it was really, before we started recording, I was like, this, we're on our toes the entire time in Heir of Shadow and Ice.
It's really funny that you say that because I had people, you know, my beta readers when they were first reading this, because we do meet several men throughout the beginning of the book and you don't know which one is going to be him. And you always see those memes where it's like, oh, the tall, dark, handsome one shows up and you just know that like things, but that happened several times.
Yes.
You just don't fully know. And they were like, is it him? Is this the one? Is it finally him? And I'm like, I don't know.
Well, and also just speaking to that, because, you know, is it him? Is it him? Because he starts doing something. You're like, is it him? Well, I mean, it could be him. You kind of go back and forth until you don't. And that is fun. And I want to say that recently there has been, for me, I statements, me. For me, I have had a lack of like fun when reading recently. And I think it's well known. I've been in a book slump. So I think that this, your book, being the politics, which I love, and this romance, which kept me on my toes and kept me like guessing on top of this world building, I was having so much fun and I was vibing. And you said that like you're a vibing reader. Well, I was a vibing reader too. I have read this several times on audio. Again, speaking to the beauty of the voice of the narrator. Fantastic.
She's so good.
She's so good. And And just kind of bringing this full circle, the voices done for these men had me like,
No, that is exactly why I knew, because I knew I wanted her. I was like, she's the perfect Clara. So she did a little sample for me with the love interest as well. And the second I heard it, chills all over my arms. I was like, this, because she doesn't try and force anything. It's very natural. It's smooth, but it was distinguished. It's different enough through each of the men's voices that you're not getting confused. It's not blending in with the narrator voice. She's brilliant.
No, she really is. And I would say that this book is as well, because these are your words. This is your world. And even though, Jess, you and I read this through audio, there is a map. You have a map.
I do.
What was the map process like? I've said I have no talent. Of course I cannot draw. Did you do like rough sketches? Like, where did this come from?
I did do a rough sketch because I did do both of the maps myself. We have an Elfheim map and then we have the Mortal Realm map. Honestly, I think I was just kind of scribbling to start it out. That's usually what I do because I like to play around. I'm trying to get better at making maps. But yeah, I just kind of played around. I knew the courts kind of how I wanted them lined up. I wanted it very, I don't know, cohesive, I think, which was kind of funny to me because it's so chaotic down there. There isn't a lot of order, but I was like, but I want them to be in order, like be lined up, set against each other, like a four square. So that one was pretty easy. The trees, did not love drawing the trees. Not my favorite. But I do it all on Procreate. So I think I did sketch this one out first by hand, and then I went in on Procreate.
Okay. I was going to say, like, have you seen The Rice Method? I don't know what part of BookTok I'm on, but it was like fantasy making maps, and you just throw the rice and they trace wherever it lands.
Yes,
you can't do that on Procreate.
I have seen that. Yeah, I thought about doing that. Well, maybe the next map, because the map I just did for my new release, which is a dragon book, A Crown Forged in Flame, I made the map look like a dragon. So I was
can't do the rice
trick this time. Maybe next.
That's nice. I like that. I like that a lot. A dragon. That's pretty sweet. I like that. My goodness. I think that it is so important to have a evil father because, like, why not, right? We love it. And we love it when things happen to this. What was it like with these family dynamics? We have a family dynamic here, and we have lots and lots of tropes. So what's this family like?
So I knew I wanted, I mean, he's the king, King Cyrus is the king of the Unseelie court. So I already knew he wasn't going to be great. He's not going to be a great dad. His priorities are a little out of whack. You know, he cares more about like brute strength, about, you know, doing what you need to get what you want. And to him, that's the ultimate strength. But of course, I didn't think that every brother would think the same. I didn't want them to be carbon copies of themselves because there's the four of them, right? To think back, I might have had more.
Like, I think I have four. Which book is this?
Don't test me.
So yeah, I just kind of thought about what each one could bring to the story. You know, we have Cain, who's he is a total brute, not the smartest. And also, I didn't really mean to write it in with him having a weird thing with his mom. I don't know where that came from. It just kind of happened in a scene, and I was like, oh, okay.
This is where you didn't plot and the pantsers showed up. Like,
the characters write themselves.
Yeah, I plot like skeletal, the main points, the fun and games in between. It is like the Wild West.
Well, they even say they're like, Kane is the favorite. Well.
Of his mom, at least. Yeah. So, you know, I wanted him to be kind of dumb, and to be the arm of, you know, the brother who is the smart one. He uses Kane to his advantage. He can kind of manipulate him. And then we have the oldest brother who's like, he's just the classic, I know everything. Everything should go to me because I'm the oldest. And then we have the youngest, who is also the half brother. So he, you know, I think it just worked out that he was kind of like the black sheep. He was the odd man out. So
super hot.
I imagine they are all good looking. In my mind, they were.
Yeah, they're fae. I can't imagine.
Yeah, I mean, like I mean, yeah, you know, they're high fae.
So
yeah, they're
hard
high
pressed
fae.
To be like, yeah, I'd be like, man, I would just be so upset. I'd be like, really? Like, choices are all there.
Even the king is good looking, but that could just be because I'm writing it and I'm like, oh, everybody's pretty.
Like, why not? Why not? Why not? Tropes. There are really fantastic tropes here. We've talked about the family trope just a little bit. Bad fathers. That's my personal little trope. Mm-hmm. There are really fantastic ones here. Do you have a trope that you just have got to put in everything that you write?
I think found family usually is a big one for me. I grew up moving around a lot. We're a military family still. So for me, finding those friends that you can really, truly rely on is so important. And I think it's a lot of fun when you're reading and you see all these really different personalities come together and like stand till the end, like would die for you. I think it's just a lot of fun to write. And it's always been really fun for me to read. So found family is one for sure. And this one, I did like riding the one horse. It's a little part, but I enjoyed that one.
Well, who doesn't love a one horse trope? What else do we have in this book? Just like right off the bat, we have, would you say forced proximity?
Yes.
Yes.
And I'd say like borderline enemies to lovers, because by all rights, they should not be remotely interested or okay with being into each other. And then I don't know if you count like fae folklore as a trope, but I did try to put in a lot of really cute little characters like the puka, the little puka pony. I really liked writing him in.
Do you have a set of, or I guess like a set list of like favorite fae creatures? Like I'm only asking this because I am cleaning out my bookshelf and I am finding little like lists of things I made when I was a kid. And it was like, oh, if I had a unicorn, I would name it. So do you have like favorite little like fae creatures?
Yeah. Well, the unicorns have always been a huge one. When I was a little girl, I had a white pony. And that's like where this whole, anytime I rode, I was like imagining she was always a unicorn, always. So that's my top one. And as a little girl, you know, like we were in the 90s, My Little Pony was top tier.
Well, then you had like Lisa Frank too, who was just like glorifying everything about like fantasy and magical and whimsical with like neon colors.
Yes. Another, I think my favorites are like just the little troublemakers.
Like the brownies.
Like, yes, the brownies, the bogeys. Like, I just really, I don't know if it's because I'm always like imagining things and grew up in the country. So like, you know, you go outside, like something's missing. It's more fun to think, oh, like a brownie stole it.
Then somebody's like creeping and watching.
Or I lost it.
Yes. Exactly. I will say that my daughter wanted for St. Patrick's Day, she was like, let's leave out snacks for the leprechaun. And I was like, yeah, we're not inviting leprechauns into the house.
It's like, How about no on that? No, yeah. That's just a little bit too far. Oh, that it's really funny though. Oh my goodness. Okay. This book is wonderful. Thank you so much for this book. This book ends directing us onto our next book. Did you have like the ending? You're talking about when you were refining your writing process that you wanted to like hit certain beats and like do certain things. Did you have the ending of this book like firm in your head, or was it something that just came to you as you started?
I did. I had a rainbow of a plot with just the main like must have points. I knew where we were going to end. I wasn't exactly sure how we were going to get there. So I did try to wrap up enough at the end of this book that it would be satisfying, because I felt a little bit, it is a little bit of a cliffhanger. I apologize. But I also didn't want to rush anything and like wrap it up too much just to not have a cliffhanger, because I wanted to hit these beats at the right time and make it more satisfying as a whole for the reader. So I did plan it out. I knew where we were going to end.
I want to read book two so badly. I think I'm just going to go ahead and just do that. And
I was thinking that and then when the audio comes out,
just do it again.
I will say the audio is coming out this summer.
Oh,
yeah.
That's not too far away.
That's far at all.
She's already started production. So hoping sometime in July, I will. I don't have a date to announce yet, but I know it'll be this summer.
Oh, that's so exciting.
I know. But I'm with Laura. I'm like, you know what? After like, and here's the thing. I also didn't go into the second book because we were speaking with you today, and I didn't want to mesh anything. And I already I was like, wait, I'm catching myself. I was going to go on this whole different tangent about spoiling something. It's like, no, that's the whole point of this conversation, is so we can get more people to read your books and be just as excited as we are, and you sharing your worlds with us.
I really am. I'm like so flattered. You guys are great.
No, it's not us. It's you. We only say what we feel. And you gave us fantastic material to work with. I really love how you have portrayed this female friendship here. And there is a moment in the book where these friends are separated, and our female main character is alone for a good portion of the time. Mm-hmm. But her friend is still like in her head, like in the forefront of her mind. She's like, oh my goodness, I hope she is here. It is all worth it. Like, this is what's really going on. And I think, Jess, you touched on it a little bit. It is really nice when the characters like do the thing, right? It wasn't just like, oh my goodness, like, oh, it didn't happen. Like, no, like, bam, something happened. They are separated. Now we move on and grow within the story. I love that. I love when there is just like a harsh like break, and it's like there's no going back from here, mm-hmm. and it's only forward. And finding the strength with the character is just part of this journey, which, as you said, like, hero's journey, sure, but like, we have some really morally gray men here as well, who are just fantastic companions on this journey of like self-acceptance, self-growth, and self-discovery, because all of this is about unlocking your true potential, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that is your true power. Your, of course, in the context of your character, it's about unlocking her magic and like accepting all of this. But truly, it's about like your self-acceptance and coming into your power. And this is just a really wonderful example of that. And I am just thanking you for that.
Oh, thank you. And that's really what when I set out to write Clara, that's exactly how I wanted to make people like other women feel. Because, you know, I'm a mom of two. They're under, I have an 8 and a 6 year old. So I'm just now coming back into my own, like figuring out who I am. And I've joined book clubs in town, and now I go to book club without feeling mom guilt for leaving my kids and husband at home. So I think a lot of that, I was thinking about a lot of that when I was writing Clara and how much pressure is on women, you know, in the workforce, whether you're a mom or you're going to work or you're in like college or something and trying to do all the things and be who you feel like you should be at that point in your life. So I really wanted to kind of, I don't know. It's like an ode to them. Clara's like, she's for them.
And it's an ode to you too, because I think there's something to be said that women, all of us, we get wrapped up into certain identities and boxes that we yes. become placed in, and figuring out and owning who you are outside of being a mom, outside of being at home, outside of your career, and being who you are and finding yourself as JM and finding yourself mm-hmm. in these stories. I think you just, you know, the messages that you are trying to portray are being received. And I think it's a beautiful thing.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. I'm going to do a hard break here. And this is what I'm going to say. I'm going to say that I have heard that you, JM, are a fan of Shadowhunters. Is this correct?
Yeah.
She's Laura's putting out there that we're like really creepy. We do like crazy research on the people that we that we have on you know, our guests and our new friends that we have on the show. So like Laura just let all of our colors show.
Yes. Well, you know, we just want to know. We want to know who we're talking to. And we discovered this. Would you like to tell us just a little bit so we can fangirl just a little bit about Shadowhunters?
Okay, so I think I started with the City of Bones and, mm-hmm. and those ones. But when I really got swept up into Cassandra Clare's world, was Clockwork Angel and all of the books that followed, because I like think it is the most impressive thing how she has created all these like bloodlines. And yes. Yeah. Like I love to world build, but what she does, the connections that she makes and the Easter eggs that she puts in each of these books, it's so fascinating to me. And I'm just a huge fan.
Talk about a murder board you'd want to see. Like hers, can't imagine.
Yes. I don't know how she keeps track of them all. Because I'm like, one time I think I killed off a character and then I forgot and they were there like three chapters later. So I don't know how she keeps track. But it is impressive. So, yeah.
Do you have a favorite, or would you have to break it down to be like, this is my favorite from this series, and this is my favorite from this trilogy?
Yeah, I really don't. I can't pick up. I do love Magnus, of course, but I think it's because we get the most time with him. Like, we see him all the time.
He's in every universe.
Everything.
Yeah, everything.
Yeah. So I think he's, yeah. But I just love all of them. And I don't even know who my favorite romance is. I honestly cannot pick. Because I just love them all. They're like comfort characters, you know?
Well, we know that Cassie has announced her final trilogy, The mm-hmm. Wicked Powers. Where do you see your books going in the trilogies that you write? Because I think historically from what you've written so far, and we know you have your standalone also, you like having that trilogy of sorts.
I do. I don't want to say I get bored after three books, but it is very hard to keep going. You know what I mean? I get really excited about another story, and I have notes in my phone, like thousands of notes in my phone about new characters, new scenes, new books, and I don't have enough time to do them all. So I'm like, three books, that's good. That is a solid series. Now we can do another. So I just published the first of the Daughters of Flame trilogy. That book starts with our main character. The next book will be her daughter. And then the third book, we will go to the prequel for the grandmother.
That's cool.
So that'll be also three books.
That's really cool. And I can only, and again, like, this was my first, Heir of Shadows and Ice is the first introduction to the books that I've read for yours, and I can't wait to go back. But for this one, I can only imagine the intergenerational trauma you may be exploring.
I'm tempting it. Yeah. I'm hoping it's well received as this. I do really miss the couple from my Claiming Elfheim. So people have asked, like, would you do anything else with it? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know if I could go back and revisit any of my other trilogies, because sometimes you just have to close the chapter and they had their time and move on. I did write a book after Claiming Elfheim. It's a standalone, Bound by Blood and Sorrow. And it is technically in the world, the same world, but it's not really related. It can be read completely on its own. I just thought, when I sat down to write it, I thought it was fun to kind of pull a little bit of the universe that I'd already created into it, kind of pull a mini Cassandra Clare. So I've been working on the Dragon trilogy. And then I hope to release a cozy romanticy. I have been sitting on this manuscript, unsure what I'm going to do with it. So I'm hoping actually to have that, the first one, out by the summer.
Really?
You are like, wow,
cranking that out.
I've had it written for so long. It just really needs some final edits and I can release it.
It's just like, I just need it out in the world, out of my hands, or I'm going to keep like tweaking it, kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, because I've been writing, these books are a little heavier. I have war, I have torture, and, you know, some heavy triggers. So I just needed a break. So I wanted to do a little something cozy that you could curl up under a comfy blanket with a, you know, cup of tea or wine, if you drink wine, and relax, and like a palate cleanser, you know. But I also still wanted to stick to my style. It's very ball gowns and fairy tale village and, you know, a little bit of folklore in there still.
I'm so excited. I know.
I just can't wait till I get to go further down the J.M. Wallace rabbit hole of like all the worlds that you've created.
No, and you did mention earlier about at a Books, Crowns, and Gowns event. Do you have any other events coming up? Anything going on?
Yes, I'll be at Imaginarium in June. And then I will be at it's like a winter solstice. It's in Youngsville, North Carolina. I do think their tickets are sold out, but I'll be there. I'm hoping to do Books, Gowns, and Crowns again when they hop back to the East Coast. It's hard to do West Coast things with my kids in school.
They've had it in the Pacific Northwest and then in Tampa, right?
Yeah.
Am I thinking that right? Okay.
Yeah. I did the Tampa one. So the first one was West Coast and then East. Now they're back out there. So I'm hoping I'll be able to make it to the, what would it be, 2025 one?
It's wild when you think about like how much further in advance with some of these.
I know, but you do have to plan. I'm a huge planner though. So I'm like, okay, good. I feel like I'm booking my Airbnb right now as we speak. Oh.
It's like everybody who we're looking at Airbnbs and hotels when the Eras Tour Part 2 were announced. You're like, I still have a year and a half, but here we go.
Yeah. Yeah. I would love to do more. Maybe one day.
That's It'll amazing. Happen. I know. And events are so much fun. And just like circling back to community, like that's a huge part of it, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
You get to interact and like meet so many people, and there's vendors, and it's just like the joy of fandom. And that's just so important.
Yeah, it really was so fun. And you're meeting people that you've been friends with on, you know, on the online space for so long. It's kind of surreal to meet them face to face. And I also really enjoyed it because we were all of our social batteries were kind of draining at the same time. By the end of the weekend, we were all like, I love you, but bye. I'm ready to go. Like, get me out of here.
I love that, like, universally, a lot of people who are like introverts, especially, they're like, look, yes. I see you, see me. We get, like, there is no hard feelings here.
Yeah, it was perfect. We all totally understood each other.
Oh. Well, Jess, I'm all finished with my questions. How about you?
I mean, I know we've been talking about all of your books, but this is your time. Like, let us know, let our listeners know where we can find you, and we'll make sure those are all going to be in the show notes. Thank you for taking the time to speak with us.
Thank you so much. I spend a lot of my time on BookTok, and I've been trying to figure out Bookstagram. I feel like I'm in my granny era, so sometimes it's hard for me to figure out a new social media.
And I feel like it's two very different vibes, yeah, too.
Yeah. So I've been spending a little more time there. I also have a Facebook readers group where I try to post like sneak peeks. If I have a sale or something or a special, if I'm doing like a signed book bundle, then I'll post it there first for them.
In your newsletter, right?
Yeah.
So we'll make sure that's in our show notes and all the links for that too.
Yeah. And for anyone who signs up for my newsletter, I offer a little novelette, very short, but it goes with my Legacy of Darkness series. So...
That's an excellent incentive to sign up for your newsletter. Oh my goodness.
I love a novella. Especially when you're like, I want more. Just give me anything. The amount of, it's so good.
And free in this economy, like bless. Oh my goodness. Yes. So thank you so much for being here. Thank you for taking the time. We really appreciate it. This has been such a joy.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks. As Jaya mentioned, make sure you're checking her out on all of her socials. We'll make sure all of that is in our show notes as well. And as always, please feel free to follow us on Instagram. We're at Acafe Podcast. And we're also both on TikTok, Acafe Laura and Acafe Jessica. Thanks so much. And we'll talk to y'all soon. Bye.